Good morning, Tucson, Arizona. Welcome to The Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Kruger. Excited to be with you here, as always, on this Wednesday, October 22nd. A partially cloudy day out there. I love this time of year. It gets lighter a little bit later, so you get to see the sunrise on the way over here to the KVUI studios, hidden deep in Sodom's Bunker on the south side of Tucson, Arizona. And man, what a busy week this has been, man. There has been so much going on between last week, between what's coming up this weekend over here. If things aren't happening, if you can't find things to do in Tucson, Arizona this week, you have got something wrong with you right now, right?
There's almost too much to do.
Unbelievable.
There's a whole lot of things I ain't never done, but I ain't never had too much fun. And that's what we do in October.
I mean, everything is just planned to be outside. At St. Charles Plaza last night, we had over 500 people turn out for a Turning Point Action event in the plaza. It was a fantastic turnout. Over 500.
Goodness.
Oh, that courtyard was absolutely full, standing room only out there on a Tuesday night in October. So it kind of shows some of the influence of Turning Point and Turning Point Action over here in their first event in Tucson since the assassination of Charlie Kirk. This was quite a draw from that team over there. They had a lot of great speakers. No actual running candidates. They kept it a bit apolitical. There was some talk out there from some candidates that may be running, a little gossip out there on who might be running for Pima County Sheriff, think a former director of the Border Patrol Union over here, Art Del Cuento, sort of alluded to a sheriff run. And so that would be pretty interesting news, I think, for Southern Arizona. And out front, that would put him as by far the front runner in the race with that much experience and that much coverage. Art's, of course, been on Fox News, you know, dozens of times talking about Border Patrol issues. And so I think we may have a new candidate for sheriff. So pretty excited to see that news over there.
Certainly familiar to listeners of this station too. He's been on a lot of the shows here. So
without a doubt. And man, to just recap this weekend, I just couldn't believe what was going on over there. We had the Rotary Club car show, right? I think Drew Vector was on with Tom Moulton last week to talk about that.
KVOI 1030 The Voice and The Groove were there in front of 20,000 people, man. This is one of the great events.
Without a doubt. Always like the nicest car show in Southern Arizona. So many cool things out there on Saturday. I got to swing by briefly and check out some cool rides. Always a big fan of that. Boots in the Park happened this weekend too. Activated Events, who had put on the Taco Fest last year, drew over 9,000 people to the Rito Downs for the Boots in the Park concert for Chris Young and Dustin Lynch. I believe that was the strongest turnout I've ever seen in all the years we've done events at the Rito, between the Conquistadors, between Dusk Music Festival. Activated Events filled up one half of the track, essentially, as it's sort of bisected by this concrete piece in the middle.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, 9,000 people. I had never seen it that full and that turnout. And the weather was, of course, fantastic for that one. And so that shows the public's demand to use something like the Rito Downs as a multi-purpose facility. There's more to this than just horse racing or a weekly farmer's market.
And the thing of it is, it's right in the middle of town. So if you're in the Northwest, the East Side, Central, it's convenient. It's equally inconvenient to everybody that it's inconvenient to. So instead of putting it at some remote corner of the region. So that's great.
Without a doubt. Super excited to see the turnout for that one. I think that gives hope to other future events to come up here at the Rito.
Amen.
Of course, the Celtic Festival coming up this weekend as well, too, right after that. So starting on Friday, the 24th through the 26th. So you want to get your bagpipes on over there. A little bit of whiskey tasting, you know, celebrate the caber toss for those of us that want to toss a telephone bowl around. Should be a fun event over there. And then, of course, the Roadrunners home openers were this weekend as
Bob,
we had Bob last week. We had a home stint against the Calgary Wranglers. Both games going into overtime. We happened to split those ones. On Saturday, we won 5-4. And on Sunday, I got a chance to go to the game. I can never make these Saturday ones, right? But on Sunday, and we lost 4-3 against the Calgary Wranglers in overtime again. But a great turnout for that one. It's awesome to see ice hockey make its way back to the old Pueblo. On hour two, we're going to have Lindsay Knott on. She's executive vice president, Mosaic Quarter, right? And a as well, the chair of the Tucson Hispanic Chamber. We're going to talk a bit about Mosaic Quarter. They've got an ice rink coming up over here. They've broken ground on this one in southern Arizona, and so we'll talk about that one.
Rising from the desert floor, as they say.
Yeah, so we'll talk about that one in hour two of the Morning Voice over here. But there's more home Roadrunners games, if you're interested, this weekend on both Friday and Saturday. There's a home stint against the Bakersfield Condors. And for those like myself that prefer the weekday games, following right up on Tuesday and Wednesday, we've got two more games against the evil Manitoba Moose. Got to look out for those guys over there from Manitoba. And so basically four Moose home games in 6 days for the Tucson Roadrunners. So get out there and check out cool events happening at the Tucson Convention Center. Root on your home team. We want to find a way to keep these guys here in the Old Pueblo, and I am pretty excited about that. So it has just been an absolute rockin' weekend. Of course, an early U of A game, that 9 o'clock in the morning start for the breakfast crowd. It's hard to drink all day if you don't start in the morning.
As they say.
And so a lot of folks did out there as well too. And we had our first home U of A basketball game as well too in an exhibition. The Wildcats looked a little rusty up front, but came by with a double digit victory and ready to kick off that season.
They
and
needed so, that tune up for the big matchup versus Embry-Riddle coming up. So
yes,
yeah,
that's
they needed
on
the
Monday nights. You got to really look out for those Embry-Riddle folks over there. A constant perennial tournament team and Embry-Riddle.
Always a threat.
But that Florida matchup is looming on November 3rd, right, in Las Vegas. That's going to be a pretty exciting matchup. Of course, defending national champions, Florida, going up against our Arizona Wildcats in just a couple weeks. So just so many things happening in the Old Pueblo. And some heartbreaking news this week. I saw there was a big fire at the Ignite Sign Museum, right? Jude and Monica Cook, the owners of Cook & Company, which is my favorite sign company here in southern Arizona. These guys do all the cool neon signs. They're responsible for the restoration of all the signs on Miracle Mile, all those signs you see on Drachman by Pima Community College. Mm-hmm. And they still even do maintenance on signs like, say, our Maverick sign to this day.
Right.
Because they're artists. They're some of the last artists out there actually working on old school neon technology as opposed to fluorescent tubes or LED or whatnot. And that character is hard to replace. And these guys, a few years back, opened up a little museum on Olson, just south of Broadway, called the Ignite Sign Museum.
Gem of a place.
Yeah, it had over 1,300 cool neon signs and remnants of Tucson's past and just a neat collection. And over 500 of them burned down in just the last couple of days. And so that's going to be a real challenge for these guys to rebuild that one.
Definitely wish them well. And I know Jude must be taking it just particularly hard because he just put his, I mean, that's, he does his job. He does his work. He does great work, but that was his passion project. And so I hope he can get everything back together and get the museum reopened.
Without a doubt. We happen to be neighbors of them, right? We've got a little warehouse property for Union Hospitality right down the street, walking distance from the Ignite Sign Museum. Like, we're big fans of Jude and Monica, and it's really, really heartbreaking to see what's happened to their super cool museum over here. They've lost over 500 of their 1,300 pieces, and so that's going to be quite a challenge to rebuild something that's a neat little iconic property in Tucson, and I'm hoping we can work together, maybe do a fundraiser or two for these guys and raise a few bucks to help get this one back off the ground, because it's something uniquely Tucson. It's got a character that is irreplaceable. We lost a lot of irreplaceable pieces in that fire, but I don't think the light has burned out yet on the Ignite Sign Museum, and I, for one, am willing to help, and I hope that some of our listeners will do as well. We've got a great show coming up for you this morning. We've got Laura Yakabuki-Perez. She's coming in from the Tucson Action Team. We're going to have a little redo of her event. We had her planned last month in St. Philip's Plaza, and we had some storms of, let's call them, biblical proportions over here, just raining all day, raining out the fire on that particular event. And she's going to come back with us here after the break. We're going to talk all things local Tucson dog spay and neutering, this amazing event she's got coming up tomorrow in St. Philip's Plaza. So don't go anywhere. Plenty more local news and talk coming up after the break on the Morning Voice. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Kruger. Matt Neely bringing it in with Who Let the Dogs Out, a very appropriate song for my next guest, live in the KVOI studios over here, Miss Lara Yakabuki-Paris.
Yakabuki-Paris.
Like, live from the Tucson action team joining us over here. Good morning, Lara.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm so well. Thanks for joining us in studio today.
I'm so excited to be in the studio. I love to be in the studio. It was so nice to see Matt Neely this morning. I'm like, what a fresh little face you are, Matt Neely.
It always makes the drive down here to the KVOI studios worth it to me to see Matt as well, too.
It is.
Break
it really
bread,
is.
Share a cup of caffeine over here, and beat up on the city of Tucson and Pima County. But this morning, we've got more positive news. Let's talk about what you do and the Tucson Action Team and what you guys got coming up.
Well, so we started the Tucson Action Team. We're about 2 years old now, so... I was on the board of Friends of PAC for a long time, and I realized there were too many dogs and not good enough laws and not educating and not spay and neutering. So we brought together the Tucson Action Team, where we try to get better laws at a local and state level. We go into schools and educate. And most importantly, we're offering low-cost spay and neuter to families who can't afford it here in Pima County.
That's pretty amazing because that contributes to a lower population, which just sort of exponentially would grow
right?
if you don't have spay and neutering like this.
Right. Who knew Bob Barker was right, you know, 20 years ago saying,
price was right.
You know, control your pet population, spay and neuter your dog. So, you know, just the wise words of Bob Barker.
Oh, I mean, I worship at the altar of Bob Barker every time I skip school and
right?
stayed home, like at like 11 o'clock in the morning as a youngster in Detroit, Michigan over
oh
there.
My
like,
God. That was the best day ever when you could stay home and watch Price is Right and just, you know, snack and roll around in bed. Yeah, that was the best day.
Oh, followed up by such quality shows as Airwolf and The A-Team, I believe, are already syndicated at that particular point. No, it is such an important thing over here. And we see it, like, on the streets of Tucson as well, too. Like, there's still a problem with stray dogs and cats out there, like, right now.
Right, absolutely. You know, and that's the thing. You know, if you're on a walk and there's a stray dog, you know, I mean, that causes a real problem. So, and it's not like there's a bunch of little poodles that are strays, you know, these are good sized dogs. So we want to keep the community safe. We want to keep the dog safe. We want to keep the community educated in adopting rather than buying a dog and really just helping people who need help. You know, people who don't have transportation to get their dog spayed and neutered will help with transportation. You know, we forget that there's Picture Rocks and there's Ajo and there's Three Points and there's all these places where, you know, people may not have transportation into Tucson to get their dog taken care of. So we're trying to do our best. So this year alone, we've already done over 450 dogs.
Which is pretty amazing.
I mean, it is amazing.
We're only two-thirds of the way through the year right now.
Yes, I know. It is amazing.
So you're on pace to do over 600, 650 dogs at this point.
I hope so. We're hoping. We just got to keep that money coming in, and that's where we are having a great event at your location tomorrow night.
Yeah, we're excited to have you. The weather is going to be fantastic.
For
those who are keeping score at home, we tried last month to have an outdoor event with you. And, you know, we pick a date months in advance and you get what you get with the weather over here. And it seemed like Noah's Ark came through the center courtyard at some point.
It totally did. It really did. I mean, it was crazy. Somebody said to me, they came up and said, oh, there's rain coming in. And I'm like, shut your mouth, you know, don't put that out in the universe. And then all of a sudden, like, we lost power on stage. And it was, here was the rain and the tables went up in the air. But the first hour we were there, it was fantastic. I mean, service was great. Food was great. Everybody was happy. Bands were playing. And then all of a sudden the rain came. So we worked with your event staff to reschedule it, and it'll be tomorrow night from 6 to 10.
Yeah, we're really looking forward to that one, though. I think this is going to be fun. This is probably a safer time of year. It's probably why there's so many outdoor events happening, of course,
exactly,
in late October, because your chance of rain related to monsoons or bits and pieces of tropical storms are just so much less over here in October as well, too. And so we're excited for a great event. These ones almost can't exist indoors, because when you're bringing all your dogs, there's these, oh, minor Pima County health codes, right? That you can't bring the dogs inside unless they're service animals.
Right.
And I know we're not allowed to ask those questions either, which always adds a bit of complexity to this.
Yes.
But ultimately, this is the kind of event that has to exist in the weather outside because you can bring your dog. We're pretty dog friendly over in St. Phil's Plaza.
Yes. I'm really excited about that. So it is. It's a dog dance party. So we're going to have live local bands. We're going to have a dog ice cream social. Every dog that comes gets a toy. We have dog vendors, so it's going to be a really good time, and just celebrating dogs and their humans. I don't say humans and their dogs, but it's dogs and their humans.
I like the dogs go first. I know in my house, with my wife, our dogs come first. Fight a pair of boxers for pillows and room on the bed pretty much every night, so I've got this crick in my neck over here right now.
Right. You know, my dogs really rule the house. You know, I spend the majority of my day getting their breakfast, letting them outside. So they really do rule the house. But yeah, we're just celebrating dogs. And then it's for a great cause. You know, it's $10. You can come in, listen to bands, enjoy the beautiful weather. And all of those proceeds are going to our spay and neuter fund.
That's amazing. Where can listeners find more about the Tucson Action Team? You guys got a website?
We
got social medias?
We do. We have all of that. TucsonActionTeam.com. You can go under events. You can click right there and buy your ticket ahead of time. Or, of course, you can get it at the door.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And so tell us about the difference again between Tucson Action Team and PAC. Like, where is that relationship? How does that work?
Okay. So PAC is the municipal shelter. So they have to take dogs. They're in charge. They're actually in charge of all animals. And you have to understand that it is so... PAC is underwater right now. They have been underwater for 5 years. They really have too many dogs and not enough space. So they've worked very diligently to educate the community and tell the community, stop breeding your dogs. Stop having these accidental litters. You know, there's just too many dogs. And so we're trying to control the pet population with spay and neuter, but they can't. You know, you have to understand there's 19 officers for 9,100 square miles of Pima County. So if your dog is off leash at a park, you call in, they're not coming right away because they're out dealing with an abuse case. Abuse is up 20% in Arizona. It's really just sick. You know, people aren't giving water to dogs and things like that. And, you know, it's hard for this many officers to take care. So PAC is the municipal shelter. We work very closely with PAC because if PAC has a clinic and can't get all the people in to take care of their dogs because they can only use usually do 35 to 40, we take the overflow. So we work very closely with PAC to, you know, help and jump in where we can. And but we're more of an advocacy group. So we educate and advocate and really try to get involved at a deeper level with people in our community.
I love it. I think this is such an important cause. And we happen to be huge dog fans over at Union Hospitality Group.
Oh, yeah.
We got the first pet patio permits 6 years ago when Pima County finally started allowing dogs on restaurant patios.
Yes.
Because it actually had created quite a problem with the service animal moniker. You could get a vest on Amazon for $15.99.
Right.
And suddenly I had service animals and parenthetical citations over here fighting each other, eating off of people's plates and doing things. And so, like, to finally have a system where we can legally allow dogs on outdoor restaurant patios, I think creates such an amazing opportunity to come out and dine with your furry best friends.
Right, right. And you and I have talked about this. I said, Grant, you need a doggy menu. You really do. And you said, you're on it. You're on it. Because, you know, they can't have spicy things and they can't have, you know, they can't have garlic, they can't have onion, and so your food is so good over at the three restaurants that I'm like, you know, I want to feed my dog too. So I told you the story that I went up to Lowe's Ventana Canyon and paid like $21 for a bowl of hamburger. I'm like, people will do that because dust dog people are crazy.
We certainly are.
Yes.
So speaking of crazy over here, we've got doggy ice cream, right? We talked about that last time. Tell me the flavors. We only got a minute and some change over here.
So we have, we should have bacon. We should have peanut butter. Selena, who owns Bark and Berry over on Broadway, always does a really nice job of bringing some good flavors.
Postman. So,
Yeah. Postman.
Postman flavor. Amazon delivery driver.
Right. Yes. Right.
Tastes like regret.
Exactly.
How could you possibly go wrong? Anyway, please come join us tomorrow over at St. Phillip's Plaza with the Tucson Action Team over here. 6 to 10 p.m. We're going to have local bands. We're going to have doggy ice cream.
Doggy toys, all kinds of bands. I mean, really good bands. If you haven't checked out some of these bands, I mean, come and check it out. Support local music, support local restaurants, and support the Tucson Action Team.
We're excited. And that's TucsonActionTeam.com is that website.
Uh-huh.
So get out there, find them on Facebook, go find them on your favorite social medias over here. Support. If you can, come on out and join us. Bring your dog, right? They're available over here. There's going to be great opportunities for that one.
Yes.
I'm not sure if our dogs are coming or not tomorrow with the boxers. They're a little questionable.
Same with mine. They need to stay home.
Hey, a big thank you, Lara, for joining us here on The Morning Voice today. Looking forward to seeing you tomorrow at St. Phillip's Plaza.
Yay, I'm so excited. Thank you, Grant.
6 to 10 p.m. Don't go anywhere. Lots more local news and talk coming up after the break on The Morning Voice. You're listening to Grant Krueger on 10:30 a.m. You're home for local news and talk. A little communication breakdown over there.
What happened, Grant?
So welcome back to The Morning Voice. 5 days a week, five different hosts. We bring you a little local perspective on Tucson. On Mondays, you've got Lydia Aranda. On Tuesdays, Ted Maxwell from the Southern Arizona Leadership Council. We had Jaime Molera on yesterday talking about all things happening in the state of Arizona. We're going to touch on that at the very end of this hour over here as well, too. We've got me on Wednesdays. You get food for thought, local news, restaurants, business development, and just a dose of politics. On Thursdays, Tom Moulton from the Southern Arizona Attractions Alliance, and on Fridays, Dr. Ed Ackerley with the wonders from the University of Arizona. Now, on Monday, one of the worst things happened to me in the service industry that you could possibly ask for. Our POS systems went down. And POS may mean something else for you listeners out there, but in this case, it's actually point of sale, which happens to be our computer systems.
Good clarification.
For many, many years, these systems that ran your local restaurants and food service establishments were based on servers, right? And there would be a computer in the back office somewhere controlling how we fired and sent food or beverages to the bar or things to the kitchen. But over the years, these services have moved to cloud-based. The cloud-based offers a lot of solutions for us. It gives us the opportunity to change things on that POS system wherever we are in the universe. You could do it from your phone. You could do it from at home. You could do it from the dining room on a laptop rather than being huddled into some dark corner of your restaurant office. And if anyone spent time in a restaurant office, let me assure you, they are terrible places to be. They're terrible places to be by design. I want them to have questionable HVAC with no light or windows in there. Why? Not because I'm a cruel person at all. I love my team, but I also don't want all my managers hanging out in the office all day. And so being able to use cloud-based POS makes a tremendous difference in the efficiency of a restaurant. And on Monday, a giant, giant data center on the East Coast running part of Amazon Web Services went down, shutting down Toast POS, the nation's leading point-of-sale system, crippling nearly every restaurant in America in some capacity. And so we lost timekeeping ability. We lost the ability to process credit cards. We lost the ability to even, because they're cloud-based, to even share information about your check between various terminals.
Oh, my.
Now, this is deep restaurant insidery news over here, but it does give me pause and thinking about how important these data centers have become to our society. When you can cripple not just quick service restaurants, but full service restaurants and just retailers nationwide with just one big data center. I thought the internet was a host of, you know, dozens or hundreds of these in some capacity.
Sure.
And yet one going down and all of a sudden the house of cards completely collapsed.
And unlike the government shutdown, this was a real shutdown that everything shut down. Yeah. So.
And so when you process credit cards, Matt, offline, right, we can capture the number in the same way that you could do with ye old knuckle buster type carbon copy thing, if you remember, from the 80s and 90s. We can get the credit card numbers, but they haven't actually been checked, right? There's not like a pre-authorization. And as such, when those computers come back live the next day, which they did, by Monday afternoon, about 4:30 p.m., 5 p.m., we started to get some of these things coming back to life. But when they do, a number of those transactions for credit cards have failed.
Mm-hmm.
The guest has already left. They've already received their food and beverage.
Yes.
And that declined transaction was approved because we didn't have a way to check on the web. And so losses on this were expected for just Monday afternoon to be over $1 billion, with a B, nationwide. When you think of just credit cards that should have been declined that afternoon, but were not. Transactions that should not have been approved. And it happens even to good people once in a while. You bounce off of a limit. There's fraud protection on the card. There's a whole host of non-nefarious reasons about why your credit cards may or may not be declined. But when you're working in offline mode, you just lose the money up front, and the retailers are left holding the bag. And so it leads me back to think about Project Blue over here and the issues that we're still having to this day in Pima County. Even with a 4-1 Democrat advantage on the Board of Supervisors, there's a great schism between those supervisors right now. We've got two that are for it and two that are against. And as Beal Infrastructures continues to barrel down this process and bring this data center, in spite of some of the opposition from the Board of Supervisors, it makes me wonder what sort of lawsuits are coming down the pipeline over here to potentially prevent this from happening. And is this something we do want to prevent from happening? Or are we going to set ourselves up for the next failure when it brings down something maybe more important about whether you could order your avocado toast online instantly, but say like, oh, air traffic control or, you know, traffic lights or something that really, really affects public safety as opposed to just can I get my lunch inside of 18 minutes or not? Like, this is something really serious that we need to think about, right? Credit cards and credit card processing and the associated fees continue to creep up and up and up. And more and more when I'm paying bills, I don't know if you see this, Matt, but I'm seeing a 2 or 3 or 4% surcharge at this point for paying for credit card.
Sure.
And I'm seeing this pop up over and over again in the local restaurants. I'm seeing it start to pop up in local retailers.
Retail, yeah.
Years ago, this wasn't legal. This was part of the agreement that when you signed up for the credit card company, that my sticker price for whatever good, you know, or chattel property I was selling you was going to be the same price, whether it was cash or credit. Yeah. Gas stations for years have been doing this trick, an extra 10 cents a gallon or something if you paid with a credit card. But nobody paid attention to that because the convenience of paying at the pump was just about worth it. And that way you weren't putting $20 on, but your car could have actually held $27.80. It was full. Mm-hmm. And to be full, we were willing to make that exchange. But are you willing to make that exchange when you pay, say, your insurance bill? Is it worth paying 3 or 4% extra all to get 1% airline miles or 1% points? Because more or less, that's about the points you're getting on this one. And so as a consumer, it starts to even give me pause. I love spending money on a credit card, right? Getting to pay that bill the next day, capturing some sort of miles, points, gold star, redeemable for something in the future, right?
Mm-hmm.
Valuable prizes later, whatever it might be. But it's starting to come at a cost. If I'm getting 1% value, why am I paying 3 or 4% fees in some capacity? This doesn't make any sense if you really do the math on this one. And we're starting to see more and more restaurants put these surcharges on their bill. For me, it concerns me as a consumer. I don't like to see it. I don't like to feel like I'm getting nickeled and dimed in some capacity, in the same way that guests, of course, don't like extra charges for things, cheese sauce, an extra meat patty,
sure,
you know, extra chicken, add guacamole, right? Chipotle, the famous one. Nobody likes to be overcharged for things. But at some point, you do have to think about, you know, the users or heavy users of these things paying for it. Otherwise, it's just baked into the price. And all of us pay for those goods in a way of higher menu prices. And then these condiments, these accoutrements are free. But are they really, when that cost is just amortized across millions of consumers? And so it gets me worried, the data centers, this going down this quickly, and how shows how weak our infrastructure truly is right
boy,
now.
Boy, oh boy, yeah.
It really makes me think that things like data centers may be part of the future for us here, some sort of redundancy to have protection of this. This is why we liked cloud-based POS to begin with, because if the server, the computer were to die in the back office 8, 9, 10 years ago, your restaurant was essentially out of business. But in a cloud-based system, at least if one of the terminals dies, the remaining system can live to fight another day and still process your dinner order. But when we think about other things such as safety, our country's national defense, right, our Golden Dome, our air traffic control, even information sharing across, say, police or first responders, and you think about our dependency on this one,
yes.
Gosh, redundancy is important, and it's something that we do need to think about.
And this is why they were
talking,
and this is why they were talking about with Project Blue, they wanted to do 3 data centers, and they intentionally wanted them not to be right next to each other. They wanted them to be in different parts of the Tucson metro area, the valley, whatever you want to call us up, call the metro area, but they wanted to be in kind of different corners of the valley, just to make, just for some physical isolation from one another, just to remove that kind of risk of a bad storm, a microburst taking out all 3 buildings at once.
Of course, redundancy is important. There's a reason we've got extra microphones over here in the KVOI studios, right?
Thank
and
you.
One of these things goes down in flames, Matt is right there to pick up the pieces and put this back together. And so we've got redundancy in such things as our mics over here and our cameras over here, and yet we don't seemingly have redundancy for billions of dollars of credit card processing in one of the most important industries in the entire country that employs over 15 million people.
And look at how we've shifted just in the last 5 years from cash to plastic. Everything. I mean, the adoption rate of using plastic in transactions now, even 5 years ago, but if you look back, say 10 plus years, using plastic versus cash. I mean, we have created a situation where we need that redundancy more than ever before.
Without a doubt. When I was at that Roadrunners game this weekend, right? We went to buy a adult soda beverage in a can over here.
Malted grain beverage.
Yes, we were very thirsty
barley
and looking
soda.
For some. Yes,
yeah.
We were looking for a barley soda, and we could not buy that barley soda in cash.
Yeah.
It could only be done on a credit card. And so it's just a brave new world we're entering over here, and we definitely need to think about data centers and redundancy for our future to make sure that these sort of transactions are safe in not just Tucson, but nationwide. Why don't we take a quick break over here, Matt, hear from some great local sponsors. More local news and talk coming up after the break. You're listening to Grant Kruger on 1030 AM The Voice, your home for local news and talk. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Kruger. As we were talking about at the beginning of the hour over here, so many things going on in the Old Pueblo this weekend, but I'd be remiss not to bring up one of my somewhat more curious observations about this weekend, which happened to be the No Kings protests that were going on, not just nationwide, but quite a few organized events here in Tucson. There was one right down the street from us at River and La Cañada area, just down the street from the Boots
Entrada,
in the Park,
sure,
event over there. And of course, I saw our mayor,
yeah,
right, with the new Visit Tucson logo
on
badge
her
on her shirt, absolutely vilifying our current federal elected officials, yeah, at a No Kings protest. And is that appropriate to wear the Tucson logo? It's appropriate for their freedom
of
speech.
They just busted out the logo last Wednesday, maybe, at La Paloma. They had a big event busting out the logo, and there she is with the logo shirt. I looked, I said, man, that logo looks familiar. Oh, sure. We just talked about it on Thursday.
Without a doubt. And so to see that particular logo already being used in a very political manner, I think is a bit disappointing for me. I like the logo. The cool new Visit Tucson logos kind of got this saguaro swoopy cactus thing going on for it over there. And I'm down with that. Like, I like that idea.
Yeah.
I think it looks really good. And I'm really happy for Felipe to put that together.
Me too.
But do you want your first optics of this logo to appear where people are essentially protesting royalty that don't exist? And one of the larger misnomers, I think, in almost all of political advocacy, I'm not even quite sure what everybody is protesting for on this one, quite frankly. But I do know that it seems inappropriate to me to drag the city of Tucson's new logo right into the fray 3 days after its
creation.
Make
it a political statement with that logo? I don't know. I just, whatever. I just, hey, it's everybody's right to protest, gather, assemble, address their grievances. I'm you know, I'm all for it. Go ahead and do it. As long as you're not impeding traffic or destroying property. Hey, we live in America. Everybody can do that. But it did catch my eye that logo was front and center in Tucson. Yep.
Without a doubt. And I think a disturbing turn of events, and one that's highly inappropriate for the city of Tucson to already have their logo on something that's just so polarizing over here. Let's use this for groundbreaking new stadiums like we're going to talk about in hour two, yeah, or new businesses that we attract, or new restaurant openings, but not necessarily to come after a duly elected president with a plurality of voters.
Well, yeah,
somebody who
got 50% of the vote. So what, I mean, is the message, see, this is where it gets confusing to me. Like, you're sending the message that 50% of the American population, you know, don't come to Tucson. That's the part where I think, you know, the optics are bad. And I think she could have thought that one through a little bit better.
Without a doubt.
Or a lot better.
Well, speaking of Tucson elections, you know, we're a little less than 2 weeks away from the all mail-in vote for city election. Ward 5 has pretty much already been decided because we don't have a Republican candidate. And so Selena Barajas will be crowned in the no kings, manner over here as the city councilwoman for Ward 5. We do have competitive races in 3 and 6, right? With Jay Tolkoff and JL Wittenbreaker both taking a stab and a big risk to go out there and run for election. I may get them to poke on next week with us a little bit. I think I've got some state race people that are starting to pop up,
sure,
and talk a lot,
yep,
as well too. Mr. Rodney Glassman has reached out to me this week and wants to be on the show, so I'm going to try to get him on in just the next couple of weeks over here. I think maybe he'll help me break down some Tucson elections results on the 5th, as we're going to have the opportunity to do a show the day after Tucson election, and so we'll be there with the facts and maybe the macabre and maybe a surprise victory over there in Ward 3 or 6. You never know. And there's also a entrance piling in statewide as well, too, Matt.
Indeed.
As we look at CD5, Mark Lamb, Sheriff Lamb, a veteran of our show over here, too, has announced his interest to run for Congressional District 5 for Congress.
Man, oh, man. So bright red district. Great name ID. That's the area that he served as sheriff. Great positive name ID, I would say, in that area. And not the burden of an entire statewide race. So I think, boy, you know, he's got a great shot at that one.
I think so, too. He had a bit of practice there in that Senate run.
Indeed.
Against Kerry Lake and got over 40% of the vote in that primary.
I think he ran a good race, and I think he gave people a positive... I think he acquitted himself as maybe a poor choice of words, but I think he did a good job of representing himself. And so I think that's a great, preparation for this race, which is in a manageable geographic area that he has high positive name ID.
Without a doubt. In a spicier race, of course, however, CD1, Gina Swoboda, has announced that she's running. She's the chair of the state Republican Party, and she's already picked up Donald Trump's endorsement in that heavily crowded field. And there is a lot of rumors on this one, Matt. Danica Patrick, has been dropped. It's not official yet, but there's a lot of heavy hitters looking into this particular congressional seat, because CD1 represents some of the most affluent parts of the state of Arizona. It's actually one of the most affluent congressional districts in the entire country when you pick up North Scottsdale, Paradise Valley, this sort of era. And so I expect that fight over David Schweikert's seat to be one of the largest, biggest fights we've seen in the Republican Party.
Deleting GoDaddy ads or something from 20 years ago. And good for her, man. Good for her. And, of course, there's already some talk like, okay, Ms. Swoboda, if you're going to run, you know, why don't you step down as the state party chair? And she talks about things like firewalls and we, you know, they'll bring in outside people to keep her kind of firewalled away from sensitive data. I don't know. I think it might be if you're going to run, and you might want to step down. It seems like a reasonable request that's being made from some in the party.
Without a doubt. Well, we've got to take a break over here and hear from some great local sponsors. Of course, at 9 o'clock, we'll get Kathleen Wynn on the line over here for 2 hours with Wynn Tucson as well, too. That might be a question to ask her, Matt. But looking forward to hour two of The Morning Voice. We're going to have Lindsay Knott coming up from both the Mosaic Quarter and the Hispanic Chamber, Southern Arizona Hispanic Chamber of Commerce for hour two, and local restaurant opening and closings coming up after the break. Welcome back to hour two of The Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Kruger. As always, I love to bring you local hospitality news and happenings on hour two when we get the opportunity. And there are cool things happening in the Old Pueblo right now. Not shockingly, it's high season. We're we're here October 22nd. So you're not going to get to hear about a lot of closings today, which is great, Matt. I love when I can just talk about openings and cool things happening in the Old Pueblo. I forgot to bring up the Tucson baseball team, though, has announced that their second home stint that was scheduled for this weekend against the Yaquis from the Ciudad Obregón area is going to be held in Ciudad Obregón. They're going to play it as a home game because they continue to not be able to play home games here in Tucson. So our second week of home stints has been canceled for the Tucson baseball team. Well, they continue to work on visa issues for the players. No word on whether next week's series, next weekend there's a series of against the Aguilas from Mexicali, and no word of whether that series has been canceled yet or moved again to Mexicali, but played as a home game for Tucson. But this debacle continues, and it looks like this is going to be weeks, if not months, to fix for the Tucson baseball team.
It's unfortunate it's an unfortunate mistake that was made, and hopefully this is just one of those startup things. I know Bob Hoffman, I think, might have been able to provide good counsel to the folks. But hey, you know, this is a startup thing, and hopefully we get this bump in the road behind us. Unfortunate that they're having problems dealing with a federal agency during a federal government shutdown, right? But
the timing is horrible, of course.
Yeah, the timing couldn't have been worse. But I know a lot of people are working really hard to get this. Unfortunately, and this is just a little insight that I can give, anything, when you have to do anything that involves background checks, there's process things you can do to speed things up. And when you bring background checks into the equation, some of those things just can't. By definition, it's a long process. So hopefully hopefully they can get their visa issues squared away, get the correct visas issued, so we can do what we all know is a great idea, is have baseball here in Tucson, professional, high-level professional baseball here in Tucson. So best of luck to the Cuevas family and the team organization, that this gets resolved as quickly as possible.
I can't wait, Matt. You know how I feel about local sports and trying to find ways to help support these guys over here. It's so unfortunate that they're missing some of the best time of the year for this one as well, too, when that temperature is just so nice at 7 p.m. I really, really lament the fact that we're not enjoying an opening pitch this upcoming weekend against Obregón. Maybe a few fans will be willing to make the trip down there and go check out the team and support them. On a more positive note, restaurant openings are starting to happen as well, too. The announcement that the Gibson's Food Hall and Market, they're at 11 South 6th Avenue. This is the Johnny Gibson's Market that we had over the last few years. They've retooled it. I got a chance to tour that facility in just the last couple of weeks with owner Nick Eggman. And he's going to come on the show in just a couple weeks to talk about this one as well, too. But they've got a call out for vendors. They're essentially building something like, oh, say the American Eats Company, but downtown, where there'll be a centralized bar and 11 by 12 and a half foot mini restaurants that can operate almost like a food incubator for some of these small businesses. You get a hood and electric and gas hookups and a hand sink and a walk-in box, and you could do your own little micro restaurant projects collectively downtown in what's going to be called the Gibson Food Hall.
So is this along the same line of thinking as American Eat Company or the various ghost kitchens you see? This is, like you said, an incubator.
Yep, this is definitely an incubator, and I think those operators will have a chance to do both. So they're taking a call for vendors right now. If you haven't had a chance to see what Nick has done with High Wire and the former bones of the Independent Distillery, plus they've created a new events/wedding venue in this space, plus this food hall over here, it's a pretty impressive project to see what they've got going on in downtown Tucson. It's both aggressive and admirable, and I promise to get Mr. Eggman on the show in the next couple weeks just to talk about this, but they're looking for vendors right now. So if you know anybody on that small front that wants to start up a restaurant but maybe doesn't quite want to go into the full Monty brick and mortar over here, this is a neat way to get downtown in the Gibson's Food Hall and Market.
Along the same lines as what you're talking about, the Vault, which is Daniel Scordato's place.
The Treasury.
The Treasury. Thank you. I stand corrected. So, it's a wedding and event venue, but I think he's maybe working, I think I heard that he's maybe working in like some concerts like midweek, just to increase utilization days of the building, which I think is a good idea.
It's fantastic. And that's a beautiful venue. Of course, the former Chase Bank over there, located at 2 East Congress. Like, can you get a cooler address than that one, right? Like 2, that's right. Your address. You are OG when your address is 2. That's pretty impressive and a great spot for sure. Dan is, of course, a fantastic operator. And I think he's doing a great job over there at the Treasury for these particular events. Now, in Southern Arizona, news breaking that we're going to get a Roadhouse Cinema in Sahuarita.
Indeed.
And so the former Desert Sky 6 Cinema on Duval Mine Road is going to be retooled and built into this dinner theater that is Roadhouse Cinema. I'm a big fan of Roadhouse. I love that they started here locally. I love that they really changed the theater experience, because when we all got 80-inch 4K LED TVs in our house and we all had Netflix, we kind of needed a little more than the traditional theater model was providing. And so these new bigger reclining chairs, I think we need these over here in the KVOI studios in some capacity.
The bring idea that up that, in the next staff meeting.
Thank you. The idea that you could have a full kitchen, the idea that you could get a malted barley soda delivered to you, table, you know, seat side to watch a theater. You've got a press for service button over here. So cool. I think it really changed the way my wife and I go out to the movies, or our family goes to the movies. I'm excited for that experience to come into Sahuarita as well, too, as they retool the old Desert Sky 6 into a Roadhouse over here. Super cool. Wishing those guys an awful lot of luck on that one. I think that's an amazing turn of events for Sahuarita, who's very hungry for locally owned establishments, right? Just in the same way Marana and Oro Valley are as well, too. Like, these guys are looking, and they're looking hard for things like this. And so it's pretty awesome to see them make their way into Southern Arizona and bring that neat concept. As well, this week, the soft opening for Kindi Thai. We've got a new Thai restaurant located at 5350 East Broadway. That's on the east side for you over there, Matt Neely. So,
all right.
So their soft opening is this week. And so excited to welcome them to the Tucson restaurant scene over here. And as I was stomping around downtown, as you'll probably see me doing a lot more often, in front of an old decrepit bar in Tucson, there's a sign for Dusty Bottoms with a Z coming soon. And this, I believe, is the former like neighborhood space like downtown that's been a multitude of different nightclubs. And the rumor is it's going to be a country bar.
Mm.
So we're going to have to see on Dusty Bottoms over here. It's easy enough to put a piece of poster board out there and say coming soon. Mm-hmm. Nothing has popped up on the liquor license applications yet, but you know I'm out there creeping it for inside information to figure out what's happening over here in the old Pueblo.
Sure, and you know, there was quite a bit of news last week and you were in it, so congratulations on Union Concepts. Grant Kruger is now the reopening what was Hi-Fi downtown.
Correct. We're going to build a sports bar like right located right at the heart of downtown, right? Congress and 4th Avenue. And so I try not to self-promote it too much on my own show. So
that's why I brought it up for you.
I don't want it to be self-serving.
Sure.
But we are really making an effort to fix a corner in downtown Tucson that's been incredibly problematic, right? Hi-Fi was the genesis of an awful lot of fights on TMZ Tucson, an awful lot of negative publicity. And of course, they were Phoenix-based operators too, Matt, which never brings a lot of love here in the Tucson area, as we always and admirably support local restaurants. And so we're working on bringing a concept that we're going to call Block A. It's going to be tangentially related to the U of A, a big temple to U of A sports, bring in some new LED wall technology that I don't think has been done yet to the extent we're going to do it in Tucson. We've got an amazing design team coming out of Las Vegas. These guys have built a number of sportsbook and casino LED walls. They've come out and built the new sports book that was at the Stratosphere. They contributed to the Circa Casino. They contributed to the new Durango Casino that's west of Strip out there as well, too. So they've done a lot of really cool sports book properties. And so we're going to bring that look and feel into an upscale sports bar concept downtown. Excited to get that
fantastic
one open. I'm hoping in Q1 of 2026. Again, restaurant openings, notoriously hard to predict, even to the nearest month over here. So I hate to put my my foot in my mouth and promise a date. I've got a hearing, a date with destiny with the city of Tucson on my own liquor license hearing on the 5th of November coming up. So I'm hoping that those individuals will be supportive of this campaign and our retooling of a really important part of downtown that I think will be instrumental in bringing back a little bit of law and order in that downtown area. I've already reached out to Nick Eggman from Highwire, the guys from Cobra Arcade Bar, and others that we're going to work on sharing our data in terms of good customers, in terms of bad customers, in terms of problem players downtown. We're excited to work with Crystal Moore and the Downtown Tucson Partnership to really help transform that portion of downtown and make it into something awesome. But again, there's so many awesome events coming up this week. You've got that Celtic Festival again this weekend at the Rito Downs. In just a couple of weeks, we're going to have the Dusk Music Festival, right? The 15th and 16th of November, Giacome Plaza downtown. The Greek Festival the day before on Friday, sharing that Dusk stage as well, too. Mm-hmm. We'll have Katerina have Shop Cleo out over there.
There we go.
There'll be some amazing Greek dancing and some amazing food as they look to raise some funds to help rebuild St. Demetrios Orthodox Church as well, too. So super excited about that one. There just couldn't be more awesome stuff going on than this week right now in Tucson. Mm-hmm. So I encourage all of you to go out there and get at that. When we come back after the break, however, we're going to talk about more awesome stuff that's being built here in Tucson. We're going to talk the Mosaic Quarter, a brand new facility that's more than broken ground. This has gone completely vertical right across from the Keno Sports Park. We're going to talk to Lindsay Knott. She's chair of the Southern Arizona Hispanic Chamber and Mosaic Quarter. Lindsay Knott coming up after the break. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Kruger. Always excited to talk local development and news for you here in Tucson. And I couldn't be more excited to have our next guest over here in the KVOI studios. She's been a 40 under 40 recipient, a woman of influence. She's been a next-gen rising star leader, an outstanding entrepreneur, and also recently voted a woman visionary by Tucson Lifestyle Magazine. She's the executive vice president of the Mosaic Quarter and the chair of the Southern Arizona Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, Miss Lindsay Knott. Welcome.
You make me sound really nice. I appreciate that.
Thank you. Thanks. I practice these. You know?
I appreciate that. That's so nice. Thanks for having me here, Grant.
No, excited to have you here this morning. So many cool things happening in Tucson this week, and you're part of a really big one.
I know, you too. We get the chance to be dynamic duo a little bit on that. I appreciate you being on the board and getting to be my colleague on that. That's exciting.
I love it. Big fan of the Southern Arizona Hispanic Chamber over here. They've been a big fan of restaurants and helped out on a lot of advocacy issues over the years for us. And I think small business is so important in Southern Arizona.
I know. You know what? Like, of all the board service I've had, don't you love being a part of the Hispanic Chamber? It's just, Rob is so fantastic. What he's brought to the Hispanic Chamber has been phenomenal. Our growth. I love our focus on small business. I think it's the backbone of our economy here. And why I love the opportunity to bring big business and support big business. I think Tucson, you know, I just was a part of the Visit Tucson rollout, their new brand.
The new logo with the cacti.
So awesome, right? I think they did a good job, but I love that a big part of our economy is small business. And I think the Hispanic Chamber has done a really good job of empowering our small business, but also looking at medium business and large business as well. And so I think the celebration that's coming with the gala is the focus of that, knowing that Hispanic business is our culture here. And so I'm excited about the gala that's coming.
Without a doubt. Why don't we back up and start right into your background for some of our listeners that
sure.
don't know who Lindsay Knott is over here. Why
sure.
don't you give us a little breakdown about your past and how you got to be where you're at
so
today.
I joke, I'm, you know, a girl from Texas, once from Texas, always from Texas. I joke that I'm a Texonan. I think there's some other people who coined that phrase, but that's a big part of my pride. People from Texas are always from Texas. So I was born and raised in Texas. I was there for the first 20 years of my life, 19 years of my life. And then I spent some time as a military spouse. A quick 20 years doing that. So I lived in a lot of places, but Texas was home for me. And then I moved here. It's been about 14 years ago that I came here. And coming here, I thought, well, I'll do my time just like I've done every other military person has done. But Tucson's a sticky place. And so I built my career primarily in the nonprofit space at first. My first gig was Junior Achievement, which I love financial literacy and that component. I had a background in education administration. So I started JA, and then I moved over to the hardest Association. So that was kind of my piece. People knew me from that. And then I got really involved in the community. And that's one thing I love about here, having been in the nonprofit sector, then I moved over to the for-profit piece. And so that's where we share a little bit, I think, some background, because I got into food and beverage through Tucson Tamale Company.
Yep.
And then people were like, oh, she's not just a nonprofit girl. She does business. That's kind of okay, maybe you can help us with our board development. And so the rest is history. I really started to spread my wings a bit. And that's kind of what helped me to build my entrepreneurial side. And that's why how I got to be a woman of influence through that. And then I worked in commercial real estate. That was a piece of that. So you see my background in that. And then that led me to meeting my husband now. And he moved here. He started coming here in 2018. And we met through business, and we started the Mosaic Quarter. So that's what I do now. I'm at the Mosaic Quarter. And
I think that there's really needs to be more connection between the business community and both our elected officials and nonprofit boards to have some people with some degree of business modicum. And I'm not saying the entire thing needs to be run by business people, but there needs to be some of that flavor. And I always worry that in some cases, like some of our governmental agencies are just run by people that have never signed the front of a paycheck and have only signed the back. And that really affects how you might manage, oh, say a $2.4 or $1.9 billion budget when you talk about Pima County and the city of Tucson, respectively.
I agree. You know what? It's interesting because I think in an entrepreneurial spirit, when you are everything to your organization and your blood, sweat, and tears is in that, and you look at that budget and you're running it like your own, there's a different level that comes into what you're doing. The passion is there, similar to a nonprofit, right? So when I worked in education, I helped build that organization from the ground up. And so I knew I had to operate in the black from the very beginning. I knew not only did the teachers depend on me, the students depended on me, but I looked at that like a personal check. And I was working in early childhood. I was in Manhattan, Kansas, and I worked with Kansas State University. I worked with Manhattan Christian College. I was working in their CTE programs, their career and technical education programs, employing that future generation. So when I moved here, I thought, well, I'll just stay in that vein, but on an administrative level. And then I think having that skill set of knowing how to create something that was procedural and not personal, I couldn't own it because I needed to be able to hand that over. That was military background for me. Every 3 years, we're relocating.
Sure, I could imagine how complex that would be.
Right. So you couldn't have that, what I call sometimes founder syndrome, that it's mine, I'm always going to keep it, my blood and sweat and tears is in this, so everything's, you know, my fingerprint is on that. And I think that was such a valuable skill set that I developed. So creating something that could be able to be turnkey was important. And so I think that's been an asset in what I've done moving forward in board service. You know, we're here to do a job. We're here to leave it better than we found it. We're here to help the organization thrive, but we can't, and we want to have our personal legacy put into it, but we also want to be able to hand it over to the next generation. And I think sometimes we get lost in that a little bit. It's about our personal footprint, and we lose track of the mission at hand of what we're supposed to do, whether that's business or nonprofit. And so I'm really proud of the opportunity to say, hey, no matter what I'm doing, whether it's my personal business, whether it's my nonprofit service, whether it's my volunteer work, I want to make sure that I'm keeping focus of the mission at hand. And so I think, you know, we have some room to grow here when it comes to that, whether, you know, I didn't have the luxury of being a military spouse of, well, one day I'm going to work for this particular organization, I'm going to have this particular role. It was like, I'm going to do the best I can where I am, because then I'm going to move on to do something different. And I think that if we could train the next generation to think like that, I think we would have a better workforce moving forward.
Without a doubt. It's safe to say that companies probably don't have these 35-year plans for you anymore. You're not working at IBM and retiring with a gold Rolex in 3 decades.
That's
with
right.
A pension, the General Motors pension job. Like, these almost only exist now in the public sector, quite frankly, right?
That's right. So that's right.
It's probably why a lot of people choose government or first responders, because of that. But the private sector just isn't going to have that for people anymore.
That's right.
It's just not untenable.
That's right. That's right. So I think, you know, if we can treat our workforce to have a desire for loyalty, I want to be here as long as I can, I want to do the best I can, but I'm adding to my personal resume to be the best employee, period, I think that's really important. So organizations like the Hispanic Chamber that say, hey, I'm going to teach you how to be the best professional, I'm going to teach you a skill set, networking opportunities, network abilities, how to build your resume and your network, I think are great organizations, and how to connect people to people, you know, government to individuals, seeing that we are a community of individuals. I like that came from Visit Tucson, like don't fit right in. You know, be who you are, but also know how to make our community rise, I think is really important. So,
without a doubt. When did you become the chair of the Southern Arizona Hispanic Chamber?
So I've done that. This is my second year in that term. I have been affiliated for over 6 years with the Hispanic Chamber. It's such an honor, and I've shared this story a couple of different ways. I'm obviously non-Hispanic, so there is a bit of a feeling when I came on, I'm like, you know, the thought is for the Hispanic Chamber, you must be Hispanic to be a part of the Hispanic Chamber. And that I think is a misnomer to people who come and are joining the Hispanic Chamber. Oh, it's a place for Hispanic people. Yes, it is a place to uplift the Hispanic population, but it's not about being Hispanic to be a part of that. It's not an exclusive opportunity. It's about uplifting Hispanic businesses, uplifting the Hispanic population. But we have to have people who are non-Hispanic to do that.
We most certainly do. Why don't we take a quick break over here?
Sure.
We're going to have more with Lindsay Knott, the executive vice president of the Mosaic Quarter and the chair of the Southern Arizona Hispanic Chamber. We're going to talk about that gala they've got coming up this Saturday at the casino. We're going to talk economic development with the Mosaic Quarter. We've got another half an hour with Lindsay Knott. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Grant Kruger on The Morning Voice, 10:30 a.m., your home for local news and talk. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Grant Kruger. Join you on 10:30 a.m., The Voice. We do love AM radio over here. And one of the reasons I love it is because we get to talk all things local, right? You can get your national dose of politics, no matter which side of the equation you're on, just about anywhere. But where else can we have educated discussions about the Board of Supervisors, about what happened last night at Mayor and Council, or as what I'm lucky enough to have sitting across from the studio right now, what's happening at the Mosaic Quarter, an amazing economic development here for Southern Arizona. Miss Lindsay Knott, you're the executive vice president of the Mosaic Quarter Development Group. Tell me a little bit about that project.
Oh, it's really exciting. It's a passion point for our family. You know, Mosaic Quarter started, my husband started coming here in 2018. And there was a conversation with some economic development folks that were like, hey, we have this 90 acres that the county owns in the city. It's right there off of Keno and I-10. So anyone who's driving down I-10, who's like, what is Mosaic Quarter? Where is it? It's right there next to the soccer fields, across from the baseball fields. And now you're seeing a giant building coming up, erecting. That's the Iceplex, the first one that's come up that you've seen. The second one that's going to come up, you'll see steel. We have all the footing right now on the ground, but you'll see steel coming up at the end of November. That'll be the field house as a second building. And the third building, we have our central utility plant that's up. But that started coming to life because the county was like, hey, we're looking for an RFP. We want to develop this land. We've looked at self-development a few times. We weren't sure what to do with that. And we want to see what some opportunities are. So Frank and his team decided, hey, we'll put in an RFP. We'll look at developing that. That came with the Keno Sports Development concept for sports and athletics and entertainment. So that's where that started. The RFP was acquired in 2020. And then we had everything signed the last couple of years. And we broke ground a year ago in November.
Amazing. So what's the capacity of this ice rink going to be?
It's three sheets of ice. There is a stadium rink that's there. The University of Arizona, all of their ice sports will move over. They're a tenant of ours. It's exciting there. You'll see the Junior Roadrunners will move there. The Adult Hockey League will move there. We're able to expand the club hockey team that the university has to be two men's teams with the women's team and a sled hockey team will be there. So we'll have all kinds of ice sports, but not just limited to ice sports. So of course, figure skating and, but then things that are, that you wouldn't think of. So ice bumper cars, there'll be, curling, there's broom ball, there's all kinds of ice activities that'll be there. We looked at, a cool sport in Canada they have where they rough up the ice and they do ice cornhole on the ice. That's big with our Special Olympics crew that love to do that. That gives
this sounds very Canadian.
Yeah.
I want curling.
Get there, get some curling going. So, I mean, all kinds of leagues, all kinds of family friendly activities. You can split the rink into pod skating, which is where you have a pod of area, like where it's partial rink use. But three sheets of ice gives it a lot of opportunity for growth. It also puts us on the map for Southern Arizona for us to be able to host that. Right now, you know, we hear a lot of people say, oh, I used to go to the rink that was here, and we loved being able to be a part of that. Right now, you know, during the holidays, we have our outdoor small rink where we get a bunch of people who want to be able to participate. But this lets us have ice activities all year long and lets us be on the map for competitive sports, for us to be able to have elite hockey, which we've never been able to host. So we're very excited about the Iceplex. it's kind of the bane of our existence in some ways to be like, oh, ice in the desert. That's what you hear all of our news stations pick up. It's not the first time there's been ice in the desert. There's tons of ice opportunity in Phoenix, but we need to be able to do that for our Southern Arizona opportunities and for us to be able to compete with New Mexico and Nevada and Southern California. We want to be able to have a place where we can host sports.
You mentioned the junior roadrunners coming over there. Have you had any talks with the senior roadrunners?
No. We had a lot of conversation about that. But, you know, I know that the TCC is happy to have them there. And that's not something that from the very beginning, that was never a part of the concept. It's just about being able to host our community ice events. And so that's never been a part. And it's not designed for that, really. It's just designed for us to be able to host the junior roadrunners and for the university. And so we're happy to just keep that. But I think outside of ice sports, the field house is really underestimated with what we're able to offer in the field house. The field house is two stories. Think when you're standing at the University of Arizona Stadium and you're in the Sands Club or you've gone to the football game and you're looking down at the field, not just the turf, but all the way out to the stands. It's 1 1/4 that size per floor.
Wow.
So we're able to host an entire, the floor is a wood base. So we can host 4 NCAA basketball courts per floor. Or you can roll out turf. We have turf that goes over it. So we can do a 7-on-7 passing football field per floor. Or we can do 2 soccer fields per floor. We can do mats for wrestling. We can do pickleball. The pickle rolls can roll out. We can do volleyball. We can do wrestling. We can do badminton. We can do cheer and dance. We can do all kinds of sports indoors. We have a series of curtains that roll down. We can do yoga. We can do Pilates. We can do all kinds of sports indoors there. And so I think the thing about that is that, you know, people ask, why is it called Mosaic Quarter? Why did you choose that name? Well, it's a quarter of the Keno Sports Development. So that's what makes it a quarter. And the mosaic component is just like a mosaic, it can be many different things. That's the purpose of the site, is we can put together many different things in one space.
I'm really excited about this. We're talking to Lindsay Knott. She's the executive vice president of the Mosaic Quarter and also the Southern Arizona Hispanic Chamber of Commerce board chair over here. And we're talking the Mosaic Quarter and economic development down by Keno Stadium. I've often been critical of the county's choice for parking that stadium down there 27 years ago. And I've worried that we've doubled and tripled down on it and not had the development that we wish to have in that area. Yes, we've got a Rudy's barbecue now. There's In-N-Out in that neck of the woods. It's not zero. But do you have plans for future restaurant bars, hotels? What do you think can pop up here in the Mosaic Quarter based on your investment?
So we have an area. So we have our central utility plant that's right beside. So when you're driving by and you see like a cinder block area, that's our central utility plant. It allows us to be the heart, really, of the entire site. That allows us to be able to power everything. Also, I think it's important that we, before I jump into the restaurant component, it's important that you realize, you know, something that's come up that's been a little bit fuego for our community is how are we utilizing resources and are we environmentally friendly? So when you talk about ice and we're talking about water, what does that look like? And we were really deliberate, and a part of our blueprint was, how are we doing water reclamation? How are we making sure we're holding that, right? Because you've got to cover ice, we've got to resurface ice. You know, something I don't know that everyone, unless you're involved in hockey, understands that, you know, the hockey is drained when we're not having the Roadrunners playing at the TCC, and then that goes away. That's why everyone who's playing hockey all year round has no place to go, and they're driving to Phoenix in between. So like our junior Roadrunners or our adult hockey league has no place to practice outside of that. So this gives them, all of our local community, an opportunity to play here at the Iceplex. But we have buried, and there's this, anyone who's curious about that information can go look at our website and kind of look at the article that's on LinkedIn that talks about the system behind our ice, that's capturing rainwater, that's helping us to make sure that we're environmentally friendly on what we're doing, in order for us to resurface. So that's really a big part of what we're doing there. Additionally, when we talked about, you know, how we're handling utilities, what's the drain on the community? What's the drain on the Iceplex? What's the drain on the site? That was really an intentional part of our development. So that's a big piece. Also, when we're looking at, you know, what's the infrastructure? And Mosaic Quarter is really unique, because very rarely do you see, what people have asked, like, have you ever done a development like this before? It's very rare that you have a parcel of land this size, 90 acres, in the middle of town where you have infrastructure, but then you're able to put in all these things around it. So you kind of look at it like a college campus. Our athletic buildings are our athletic pieces. We have 3 hotels going on site. So that's kind of like the dorms. And then we also have the ability to put in food and beverage there, so that's kind of the cafeterias on a site, and everything's connected. So we have that infrastructure. If you look at some of our Other developments like up north, they didn't have the infrastructure. So they have this massive athletic complex and then no infrastructure around it. So it's really hard for it to thrive and be successful. But we don't have that challenge with Mosaic Quarter. So we originally created it with 14 restaurant shells.
Oh, wow. That's big.
We've pivoted a little bit from that. So we have, there is a restaurant inside the Mosaic Quarter that will allow, that's kind of our club seats. So it's at one end of the Iceplex on that stadium seat. And then we have an area called the MQ Crossing that's right outside of that, which will allow, similar to what we've done at St. Phillips, which allows you to have overflow from the Iceplex so that you can be able to see what's happening out there. It's a gathering space for people to be. There's splash pads and places for people to gather. Another piece that I really like is we've worked really in complement to the county, because you right now, you know, if you go play soccer, you can't bring in any outside food and beverage.
Oh yeah, they're tough.
Yeah, they are. And so we've had to have a lot of conversation with Sarah Horvath over there to say, hey, listen, we're not going to have those kind of standards at Mosaic Quarter because it's a community space. And so we need to know that people can come, let their kids practice, and can sit outside and have affordable places for them to eat. If they want to partake, we need to have options that are good enough and that they want to partake, but it's not a requirement if they want to sit and have their children outside and they want to pack a picnic or they want to bring their food. And so we will have spaces at MQ Crossing. We'll have the Iceplex. We'll have a place at the Fieldhouse Cafe. There's options for them to eat, and it's not standard catering cuisine. Not that there's anything wrong with standard catering cuisine, but we want it to be a step above so people want to be able to purchase, but we don't want people to feel that they have to purchase in order to be able to feed their family. It needs to be a place where the community can be. And the reality is, this is our community space. Majority of our economic impact is based on community programming. The tournaments that come in, the people who come from outside, that's bonus.
Without a doubt. I think that's really exciting news. And I'd love to hear more about what restaurants are going to come up in the future.
I know that's your jam.
I know restaurant openings are tough to predict, so I'm not going to put you on the spot when that component is coming, because probably nobody can predict that one over here. Uh-huh. But why don't we take a quick break, and when we come back, let's turn gears, and we're going to talk about the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. We got a gala coming up this weekend over here, honoring both a couple alumni of this show over here as well,
right,
too. More coming up with Lindsay Knott from the Southern Arizona Hispanic Chamber of Commerce when we come back after the break.
Thanks, Grant.
Welcome back to the final segment of the Morning Moist. We're lucky enough to be joined for one more segment by Miss Lindsay Knott, who happens to be the chair of the Southern Arizona Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. Welcome back, Miss Lindsay.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks for coming today. We've got a little event going on at the Chamber this Saturday. You want to talk about that?
It's a big event. I'm so excited about it. You know, this is like, it's so funny because we love Rob so very much, our president and CEO. But of all the events we do, this is the one event that he's like, he gets the most anxious about. And I don't know if I'm showing his hand, but he's not the gala guy. Like, that is, if you know Rob, you know that the one thing he is not is the Mr. Gala guy. So this is where we get an opportunity to shine with everything else. He loves the program part, but you'll never catch him on the dance floor. But we got to call him out a little bit. I'm like, Rob, get out there. Like, do a little flamenco. He's like, no.
Let's see if we can get him on the dance floor.
Let's do a challenge to our guests. If you come and you can get him out there, I'll personally give you $100 if you can get Rob Elias out there doing a flamenco, but it will never happen. So
let's talk about that event. Where is the Colores de Alma Gala this year?
It's at the Casino del Sol. We love our friends at Casino del Sol. Lisa Sesma is on our board, and but even before that, they've been wonderful supporters of the Hispanic Chamber. And so it's there. We have great entertainment. I'm so excited. We have a Selena tribute band, and Erica Aguilar was a big part of securing that for us. So we're so excited to have them there. The name is Dreaming of Selena. So it'll be a great party. But most importantly, our honorees. And if people are not aware, I want to make sure I give them a shout out. So Jaime Chamberlain. I know you probably, I don't know if he's ever been on the show, but Jaime's great. He's from Nogales. He's with Chamberlain Distributing, so they're a big produce distributor. And then our Hispanic Businesswoman of the Year, Jackie Vasquez Lappin from the Lappin Foundation. I know she's an alumni of the show. We love what Jackie's doing. And correct me if I'm wrong, you're on the board over there.
That's correct. Big fan of the Lappin Foundation over there, like College and Career Club is what we're calling it now. And they do wonderful work at Wakefield Elementary School and just help out so many kids from the South Side. I think I'm really proud to have been part of Jackie's nomination and to award her that this year.
She's so fantastic. Well-deserved honoree. Our Corporation of the Year, Southwest Airlines. So I'm so excited to celebrate what they're doing. It's going to be a great opportunity to talk about what they're doing for the Hispanic population within their organization. Our Small and Medium Business of the Year, Real Good Concepts. So I know you're real familiar with them, being culinary background. Are you familiar with some of their venues?
Yes.
So you can maybe tell our audience a little bit about some of their places.
Like Real Good Brunch Company?
Yeah, we love them. So they're great. We love that they're small and medium business. Our Legacy Award winner, this is something I'm really excited about, Dr. Alfredo Valenzuela. He's a mariachi program founder. So he's been at Davis Elementary. They've done a ton. And then our Public Servants of the Year, Mark Kelly, our senator, and then Gerald Kakanis, the Bishop of the Diocese of Tucson. So it's a great group that we get to celebrate. I would be remiss if I didn't talk about a couple of our big sponsors. So the Lappins have been they're a big sponsor for the organization, for the event. And then AGM Container Controls, there are two primary sponsors. We have lots of other sponsors that have participated, and I can't get through the whole list, but we will definitely celebrate them at the event. But those two are our signature sponsors of the event.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I love Jaime Chamberlain. He's a great guy. I'm SALC with him, get to sit with him at a number of events over there. Jackie's fantastic. The crew from Real Good has done a really great job in investing in downtown Tucson as well, too, because they're the neighborhood, they're Cruda, they're Entejitos, and I can't say the name maybe of the last one.
Thank you.
Here on the radio.
But they are Real Good Brunch is right up the street here.
Yes.
Alberton, just south of 22nd, just right up the street from us.
Yeah, we can swing up there for a nice brunch one of these days.
Indeed.
It'll probably be real good.
It probably will be. I mean, they're fantastic. And I'm really glad that we get an opportunity to stay true to our roots, to make sure that we're acknowledging food and beverage, because it is the heart of our community. And particularly, there's so much about Hispanic culture and food, and that's a big part of it. So we would be remiss. Last year, we had several food and beverage that were acknowledged. I think that's been running year after year, but that's a big part of the Hispanic culture. So it's really great that we're honoring them. Auction items, you guys, it's really impressive. We have trips to we're going to Curacao. There's a trip you can win. There's a couple of trips to Mexico. There's Jackson Hole, Wyoming. So we have some opportunities. You can win some trips. We have a diamond scoop from the diamond store. This is so cool. They're doing a box with sand. You can pay $100 for a scoop and then shake and then potentially get loose stones for $100. And then they'll help you to be able to, it's like they're almost a full carat.
Wow. So, don't tell my wife about this. I can already see this costing me some bucks over here. Yeah, she's going to bring a steam shovel.
Yeah, she's like, I'm scooping. So that's super fun. And then we have a live painting from Ignacio Garcia. He's going to be live painting, and then that'll go up for auction. So that's really cool. That'll be a part of the event. I mean, I can't even tell you how spectacular the event is. I'm really proud of the effort that's gone into that with the people that are going to be there. So yeah.
Are there tickets still available?
There are tickets. We're close on numbers. $175 a ticket. Obviously, it's black tie, so think full-length gala gown, think your tux. I mean, it's an affair to remember. Or you can do $1,500 for a table of 10. And then I think it's important to remember, it's 6 o'clock check-in on Saturday night.
Looking forward to that one this Saturday. Get out there and see the Colores de Alma Gala from the Southern Arizona Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. Lindsay, it's been fantastic to get to spend part of our Wednesday or your Wednesday with us over here and get to learn more about you. I wish you a tremendous amount of success in both the Mosaic Quarter, and I know we're going to be successful on the Southern Arizona Hispanic Chamber of Commerce as well. So get out there and experience that gala this Saturday amongst all the awesome things that we have going on in Southern Arizona. This is a good one. Thank you again, Lindsay.
Thank you, Grant.
And thank you, listeners. Looking forward to next week on The Morning Voice. Don't go anywhere. We've got Kathleen Wynn coming up after the break. So much more local programming on 10:30 a.m. The Voice. It's always our pleasure to bring you local news and talk.